You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Third and final hour on a hump day, at least along the network. And that means Seth Effort. He of Sports with Friends and Hall of Justice. Follow him on Twix at Seth_Everett. Seth_Everett. Seth, how you doing this week?
How am I doing? I'm doing great.
Well, I'm doing great. I must admit, you look different for those that take in our show, twitch.tv/MillerMoulton. And maybe it's just because I know, it's in my head now, that you are one of us. The first digit is a 5. But because now you are 50, I'm like, wow, Seth's getting gray. Never, ever before. Same camera angle, lighting, and everything for all these years. I've never looked at you and went, huh, now that I know you're 50, I'm like, I'll be damned, Seth's getting gray.
The funny thing is I started turning gray when I was like 28. And at 29, I met my wife, and she just said, you're too young to be gray. And for like 10 years, I colored my hair. And then when I was getting close to 40, I said, this is stupid. I said, I'm not a vain person. It's dumb. And I stopped, and then all of a sudden, I'm gray.
And expensive to color your hair.
Yeah, coloring your hair. Yeah, because I was too chicken to do like one of those things where you put the gloves on. And
No, you got to do it right.
Yeah, you got to do it right.
What'd you do? I mean, because I want to, because I'm like almost all white now.
Yeah.
And I would like to, all right. And yes, almost. Okay. The top.
I didn't say that out loud. I just lipped it.
Yes. No. There's actually parts of me that's still pepper. Okay. There's actually a pretty decent, middle of my hair is pepper, but you can't see it. Everything that you basically see is white. And there's a part of me that's like, I would like the Grecian formula.
No, because then it's just obvious that you're coloring your hair. You have to go spend the money, go to a salon and do it right.
What do you mean? According to the ads, okay, you put the Grecian formula in and slowly over time, pepper
comes back. Were you a client of this for 15 years too?
Just swish. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. But
do you guys see the big Champions League game yesterday between Arsenal and Porto?
No, we don't care.
Oh, my God. It went into extra time, and then it went into a shootout. I was riveted.
Well, your hockey team sucks now, so now we know what you're doing in the middle of the day. Yeah.
That they do, but that Ranger punk got suspended for 4 games.
And he deserved it. It was a cheap hit.
That's the second one.
It was dirty.
He's knocked out two of our guys.
I know. He deserves to be suspended. And the next time they play the Devils should beat his blank.
Well, they tried.
But
the
problem is they
can't. Chicken. He was afraid. He only likes dirty plays. He's a weasel. No, sorry. Zibanejad's the weasel. This guy's just a punk.
He's 6'5", 240-pound punk. So, I mean,
I have zero respect for that dude. He's like all the bad things that Tom Wilson is, but without the talent.
I can't disagree. It was a dirty play. Got to stop that. No place for that in the league. I'm with you.
That's right.
But by the way, after the show, Seth and Trent are going to commiserate because one guy's hockey team's already gone in the tank and their season's over, and the other guy's hockey team is going in the tank right now and their season's a couple of weeks away from being over. So Seth and Trent are going to do Our Hockey Team Sucks podcast. That'll be coming up at about 10:15 this morning.
As fun as that might be, the interesting part is they're only 6 out of the playoffs.
Oh, please.
The other team.
Yeah, I don't know. I will say, David, you and I are a little bit apart on this because last night you had the Rangers and Carolina playing for the division. I'm like, they've got 15 games left for crying out loud. I've watched the Islanders. I watched the Red Wings win 6 in a row, followed by losing 6 in a row. The Islanders won 6 in a row. Now they've lost again. I mean, there's so much that can happen in this league.
So much that can happen. It's far from over. It's annoying because the way they're playing, it should be over. It should be over. But when you're 6 out with 15 to play, you're in it. You're still in. They play at Dallas tomorrow.
That's a loss.
Have you watched a game at the Arizona Arena?
Yeah, I went to a Flyers Coyotes game. Yeah, last year I went to
6,000 people,
4,500. It's a cute little minor league hockey arena. It really is for a college arena. Yeah. You know, it's not Engelstad, you know, in Grand Forks, North Dakota, that's got 15,000 people or what have you. But I mean, for a, you know, a hockey program, a really clean, great concourses, good food, 4,500 seat arena. It's for a double A hockey team. It'd be awesome. Problem is, an NHL team's there.
That's right. And it's awkward and it looks really weird on TV. The Devils play there this weekend. That's a weird
well. They've only got they only really have one shot to go to. There are no upstairs shots. That, you know, I mean, there's the cameras don't really, because I watched the first period of the Red Wings and Coyotes the other day, and the Wings got whacked, so I didn't watch much more of that. But they've got nowhere. I mean, the camera guys have nowhere to go when there's no action. Because they're already shooting the whole
AHL
arena.
NHL makes a night free, like on their app. And I'll get an email in the AHL. They'll say all 13 games tonight, you can stream them for free, and I'll put it on. I'll check it out just to see the buildings or whatever it is. I'll watch 10 minutes of it. But when I do, I see these tiny arenas, and I love the atmosphere. It's very infectious. To play an NHL team there is embarrassing, and that has to get rectified soon.
Yeah, they're going to Salt Lake.
And then the story this week about Atlanta trying to get a team. Are you joking? They lost two.
Well, the first one wasn't their fault. The second one was.
Okay.
No, I mean, I worked in hockey in Atlanta. It's actually something I know a little bit about. When the Flames left, it's because the owners went broke, and that's where they sold the team. The Thrashers, there's no excuse for that.
I can't imagine going back there.
They won't.
Well, Seth, this is the, you know, we know why Bettman has pushed for Phoenix, because he saw the growth of Phoenix, and now Phoenix is either the sixth or eighth largest market in the country. So obviously, if you're a commissioner of a major sport, you'd want a team in a market that size. Well, look at the size of Atlanta. Houston's got their hand in the air, and Salt Lake City, which is hosted an Olympics, so they certainly, in theory, could have a Major League Baseball team or an NHL team, right? And they got their hand in the air.
But then, you know, I did a podcast this week with Everett Fitzhugh. He's the radio play-by-play guy of the Kraken. And they have not really caught on. And just this idea that, you know, we love hockey and I watch every night and I'm a huge fan. But there are markets that you would think are natural hockey markets. And Seattle is one of them. And it's not clicking.
You know, and Seth, you live there, so you're better at this than I am, because I never think of Seattle as a hockey market. I think of Seattle as a basketball market, that this hockey team's only been there so they could get a basketball team, and that's all they're waiting for. So I never thought of this as a golden hockey market.
But when they had their success last year, which they did, you would think they would have built momentum. You know, for a second-year franchise to suddenly be good, you would think that's infectious. Look at Vegas. Look at the Colorado Avalanche. Now, that's not an expansion team, but they came in, won the championship, and now they have this massive fan base. So you see how it can grow, and it's just weird. So we talk about all these cities that have all these people, Atlanta and Houston. You're not wrong. None of what you're saying is wrong. But I just wonder, is hockey going to work? It works in Nashville, and no one thought it would. It's just, it's weird. It's not an automatic that you have a lot of people, so they're going to go to these games.
This may be a very stupid point I'm about to make, but hell, it's one of 40 today.
Oh, you started the show with
exactly,
a Grecian formula.
Right. So, yeah, exactly. So, it's obviously heading downhill. So, I was in Seattle about 2 weeks before the Kraken were going to play their first game. Uh-huh. And the local paper, which hadn't gone online only yet, had a 4-page in their sports section teaching you about hockey, the rules of hockey. I'm being drop dead serious when I say this. If the local paper feels they have to print a 4-page insert telling you and teaching you about hockey, I'm not sure that's the place for your NHL franchise.
No, but I think it's a creative way for to try to introduce people who weren't fans. And I think that's harmless. I think the biggest thing, you made the point before, they are only built got that team there so that they could build the arena and so they could get a basketball team. And they want one specific basketball team. They want the Supersonics and they want the Records. Because remember, that part of their move, the Thunder took all the championship trophy and all the retired numbers. The city of Seattle just wants to retire Gary Payton and Sean Kemp's number. That's all they want to do. And the reality is, you know, if the NBA is going to go there, that's going to be harder for the entertainment dollar. And I remember an interview I did with the owner of the Sonics back in the 90s. They purposely built Key Arena too small for NHL hockey because Barry Ackerley thought that that would be competing for the entertainment dollar. And he had a point. So the interesting part about it, because you look at Arizona and, like, you know, they're fighting for an arena. There's no price that the Suns will allow the Coyotes to play in their arena.
No, the Suns want nothing to do with the Coyotes. They're not helping them at all.
Again, this is the Giants and the A's thing situation. Everyone has a price. Everyone has a price. Do you think the New York Giants wanted the New York Jets at the old Giants Stadium?
Yeah, but the new owner of the Suns, he paid $4 billion for the franchise. There is no price. He's got more than enough money. There's nothing the NHL or the Coyotes could pay him that would move him.
Fine. Why does it hurt the Suns having the Coyotes there?
I don't know, but they've never wanted, right, Mark?
They've never wanted anything to do with the franchise.
I know. It's telling that this was the best option. Like, this was your best plan? It's amazing.
All right. Well, we covered a lot of ground today. Sports with Friends Hall of Justice. Go.
Everett Fitzhugh, the play-by-play. He's the first and only African-American play-by-play voice in the NHL. Everett Fitzhugh, it's a really cool story, how he got the gig. It's a lot about the reaction to his hiring. It's an interesting podcast. He's a very interesting dude, and I was thrilled to have him on. Hall of Justice is a gentleman by the name of Mike Carlin, who in the 90s was the editor of Superman. He's the guy who orchestrated the death of Superman. And then he went to Warner Brothers Animation and worked for 10 years and worked on maybe 15 to 20 animated films. And we go film by film. It's a really fun podcast. It's the part one of two.
Seth Everett, Sports with Friends, Hall of Justice. Follow him on Twix at Seth_Everett. Seth, good luck with the hair. And we'll see you next week.
And no jury duty. Woohoo!
Miller and Moulton. Shelby Mast, Bracketology in 25 minutes.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
21 minutes past the hour, Shelby Mast, who's been kind enough to be our resident bracketologist for many years now. Shelby will get up, because he stays up, watches all the games late, posts his bracketology up to the moment, and then goes to bed. And so we'll wake Shelby up in about 15 minutes. So Trent, look forward to that. He should be in a great mood when you call. We'll wake Shelby up for bracketology coming up in about 15 minutes time. So our question of the day, poll question. Nick Saban testified before Congress yesterday with Ted Cruz sitting right next to him saying, NIL has ruined college football. Well, we're asking you. You agree with Nick, or do you think, lighten up, Francis?
55-45 to the yes right now is what the poll says, David.
All right. That's the closest lighten up Francis has been all morning. It's been in the low to mid-60s most of the morning.
I'm fine with the question. You could have rephrased the question to Nick Saban, NIL has ruined college football. What's ruined it for you? NIL, the transfer portal, it's not ruined. Because I think a lot of the people that are voting no don't like what's going on in college football, but have a bigger problem with the portal than they do with NIL.
That's where I'm at, to be honest.
Right. Once again, it's, you know what's causing the problem? The athletes. Right. It's the athletes transferring and getting paid. It's not the powers that be that control the sport. It's the players.
No, well,
let's just keep blaming the workforce. They're the problem.
The argument against
not
the portal,
the
David, is there's no penalty to transferring anymore. So people just can – I'm all for if you want to leave, go for it. But you can't – the fact that players don't have to sit out anymore for a year, why wouldn't they leave?
I have no problem with it because I've worked in an industry where I can't get up and walk across the street for more money because I had a non-compete. So I would love to revisit this conversation with you, Trent, providing the sports radio business stays alive for 15 years in 15 years and see what you say about it.
That's fair. That's very fair.
Quickly, do you think if the head coach leaves, the kid should be allowed to transfer, no questions asked?
Yes.
Okay. So do you think every player should get one transfer? Anything after that, they have to be penalized?
That's a good question.
The original transfer.
I just like how it used to be. I like where you had to redshirt, you had to sit. Now there were exceptions, medical, all that stuff. But if you maybe
the good old days when you didn't want to give the school didn't want to give the kid a scholarship next year, you didn't have to. But damn if you transfer.
But I think a good compromise is what David just said. If the coach leaves, you can get out of there.
Well, we've wanted that forever. We've been saying this for at least 10 years, if not longer, all right, that if the head coach leaves, we think every kid on the roster should be able to get up and leave because the whole you commit to a school, not the coach, is absolute garbage. You commit to coaches. That's why there are some that believe, actually, that if coordinators leave, kids should. We don't want to go that far. We'll just leave it with the head coach.
But the transferring – I don't know how you can make him sit out. I have no problem with the transferring. The transferring with I see it being unseemly, but they need someone in charge of their sport. There's no one in charge of the sport.
Right, and that's never going to happen. We've talked about that at length.
Well,
there will never be a single commissioner. There's no way Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti are going to listen to someone. Here's the only thing. If you were to get a commissioner of the sport, Mark, you think about it. There are four factors at work here. Fox, ESPN, Greg Sankey, Tony Petitti. The person who would be the, quote, commissioner would literally only be a mouthpiece. Period. They would just be told what to say and do. They would be given the title. They'd parade around the country. They'd do guest spots on shows like ours.
So
they
Bill Hancock
literally would have nothing to do with the running of the sport.
Isn't it Bill Hancock that runs the College Football Playoff Committee? It would be him.
Yes. And it would anybody feel better? And we love Tim Brando. He's wanted a commissioner forever. But if Bill Hancock was the commissioner of college football, do we honestly think anything would change? Or do we think he'd sit in the room and look at Fox and ESPN and say, so what do you want me to say?
I think there's a better chance of someone in charge, believe it or not, if they broke away from the NCAA. While they're under the NCAA's guidance, David, I think there's no chance of a single entity or two entities running the sport.
Well, it's interesting you say that because one of the quotes that has come out in the last week with this whole college football playoff negotiation is somebody who's connected to either the Big 12 or the ACC gave an anonymous quote in which they said, so if we say no, will they really break away? Because obviously there's a lot of, you know, Big 10 and the SEC behind the scenes are really leaning to get all that they can get from the rest of the sport. And there's finally, you know, it's one thing for Miller and Moulton to say this out loud for the last few years, but it's nice that somebody in the room is finally going, come on, are they really going to leave? Seriously? Because if they play each other, you know, that's the NFL. That's a lot of losses. You see, ask the Ohio State boosters how much money they're going to give if they go 8-4, 9-3 in back-to-back years. I'm just telling you. Now, how's that going to work out?
Where it's truly a level playing field with
right
all 48 teams that have left to go into the Super League.
Chiefs just went, what, 11-6 and won the Super Bowl? Okay, yeah, right. Ask a Georgia fan how 11-6 sounds right now. Oh, well. So that's our poll question. That Mark Miller, the David Moulton. Okay, at Miller_Moulton. Hell, I even think it's on a website or two. There you go. Vote accordingly. one thing I wanted to throw out there, and do you know there's a guy in the NBA with a streak going? It's a recent streak. It's like a week old.
Right, the center for
Dallas.
Dallas hasn't missed a shot.
In his last four games.
Right.
He's 28 for 28. 7 for 7, 5 for 5, 7 for 7, 9 for 9. One of those games was against the Heat. I think they're like 2-2 in the four games. He was asked about it after he went 9 for 9 and he got to 28 for 28. And he said, well, I keep running the pick and roll with Luka, and let's just say they're high percentage shots. But still, it's 28 for 28.
No, that's really good.
Apparently, Wilt went 35 for 35 at one stretch. That's the record. He's got to go, and I don't know if the Mavs are playing tonight or tomorrow. But
so he's got to get eight more consecutive buckets for the record.
Right.
The Mavericks host the Warriors tonight at 8:30.
There you go. Now he's aware of it. Free throws don't count, but I'm just saying, now he's aware of it. He's fully aware. He's been interviewed about it. He's talked about it, the whole deal. He knows he's 28 for 28.
He's going to keep getting open looks.
Luka's going to keep running. Luka's had like five straight triple-doubles where he scored 30 or more points in his triple-doubles. I mean, he's going to get high percentage looks here. But still, Mark, he's 28 for 28.
Someone put a hand on that guy.
I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, even if you want to make the case that like most of them are dunks and standing layups, it's like just to not miss one in that whole stretch, to not miss a contested baby hook. I mean, that's remarkable.
Right. So, that's all. 28 for 28. I'm like, huh. And it's four games, too. Now, granted, he hasn't attempted a three or anything like that. He's the 6'10 center, fourth-year guy. After he went 7 for 7 the first game, they put him in the starting lineup. And since put in the starting lineup, he's 21 for 21. So, obviously, he's going to start tonight, right?
It's a way to earn a spot right there. Coach, if I miss, do I still get to start?
So anyway, just thought it was worth mentioning tonight. Miller and Moulton. Shelby Mast. Who's in? Who's out? Who can't afford to lose? Who still has work to do? Boy, it's a lot of questions for Shelby. It's all next.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
22 minutes before the hour, our final segment along the network. The Diamond District Bonus Hour awaits for our loyal audience in the 239. He literally gets up to do this segment. That's what a pro he is. That's also how much he cares about the brackets. He is Shelby Mast, bracketwag.com, bracketwag, W-A-G.com. He's also the bracketologist for collegeinsider.com. Follow Shelby on Twix at bracketwag, W-A-G. Shelby, it's David and Mark. We're very appreciative of this. Good morning. How are you?
I'm a little tired, but I'll make it.
These next 5 days, this is money time. We get it. All right. There are so many questions. Who's in? Who's out? Who can't afford to lose? How many wins certain teams needs to get in? Let's just start with FAU. They're a 10 seed for you. We're assuming then if they make it to the conference final, you think they're in. What if they get beat in the semis in a 2-3 matchup? Will they make it?
It's going to be a nervous selection Sunday because I don't know if their resume, they've got that nice win over Arizona that carries a lot of weight, but that's about it. They're a good team, but the committee doesn't seem to use the eye test anymore. So they go by metrics and everything that's on paper. So I don't know if they get to the semis, there's going to be a toss-up.
With those metrics, is Indiana State still in after losing to Drake in the conference final of the Missouri Valley?
I've got them in. I think they would be in, but they need help. They need to hope that no bubble teams go on a run or have a big week. Wins by bubble teams, that's going to scoot them down.
Okay, well, And in a way, Shelby, with your bracket, because you don't have South Florida winning the AAC, you have FAU winning the AAC. So in theory, if the Bulls, who are the one seed in the American, win the conference tournament, and let's just say they beat FAU in the final, then that becomes a two-bid league in your estimation. So South Florida, in your bracket, is a bracket buster, aren't they?
Yes, they are in mine. A lot of people don't see it that way, but I do. I don't think South Florida will get in as an at-large. I don't think their resume is strong enough.
Out of your last four in, who is the St. John's, A&M, New Mexico, and Virginia? Is A&M your last team in the tournament right now, Shelby?
Yes, they are.
Does one loss put them out in the SEC tournament, or do they need to win a game to still maintain their spot?
I think they need to win one, maybe two, to stay in. They've got a very middling resume, and it just depends on what the committee is looking for.
So, to you right now, New Mexico, Virginia, St. John's, A&M, the last four in, to you it'd be pretty obvious. They lose their first conference tournament game, they'd be out, wouldn't they?
I think so.
Colorado, Iowa, Providence, Utah, by the way, the next four, and think about it. All right, you got Colorado in the Big 12 tournament. You got Iowa in the Big 10 tournament. How many wins do you think for Iowa? Because I think they need at least two.
That's why I agree with that. Two wins, and that should get them in, because it'd be Ohio State, which is no big deal, but then Illinois, that'd be a nice win.
Does Michigan State have to beat Minnesota to get into the tournament?
I think so. I mean, their metrics are nice and all, but God, they keep losing.
Do they ever?
You know, a couple of ACC teams to me are interesting, and the ACC is interesting. All right, Pitt and Wake Forest. A, how many ACC teams do you have in right now? And B, how much of a run does either one need?
I've got four teams in right now, and I'm not 100% sold on that. Pitt and Wake, I think if they got to the finals, they'd be in, but that's just a guess.
And when the Mountain West, you still have with six teams in, Shelby?
Yes, I do.
Boy, that conference. It's amazing that the Mountain West could end up with more than the ACC this year, but that seems likely.
So, yeah. Shelby, what do you say to the ACC folks, including the coaches, who are, I think, a little angry with people like you and the metric system, if you will? I mean, they're like, listen, our conference is better than this. We just won the ACC Challenge 9-3. What the heck? Why are we in the last couple years? Also, look at our recent tournament success. We've been killing it in the tournament. Why does none of this count?
Well, past years don't count for this year's tournament. I mean, it's a nice to have on the wall, but it matters not. What matters is for this year, and the league is just not that deep. Miami had a bad year. The several teams just kind of were meh, you know, and they've got to build back the lower end of the conference to where they're not a bad win or a bad loss.
We've pretty much had three ones, UConn, Purdue, and Houston. They've been kind of locked seemingly all year, or at least for quite a while. You've got UNC on the one line. What do they have to do in the ACC tournament to maintain that?
I think they probably need to get to the finals and hope Tennessee does not get to the finals.
So if it's a case of one of them wins their conference tournament, the other loses in the finals or semis, you think that could be the difference between who's a one and who's a two?
I think so. The problem is the Southeast Conference is played on Sunday, their final, and the bracket's usually done by Saturday night. So unless they have a contingency bracket, I think Tennessee, they've got a better shot, I think, at it because they've got tougher competition.
with the bottom end here, the teams like, you know, James Madison getting in, who have you watched this year that you think on that 12-13 line is the most dangerous? And I know you don't predict winners, but who from what you've seen this year out of the 12-13 line is the most dangerous to do damage this year?
I think Grand Canyon and McNeese State, both of them have Power 5 coaches that have been at Power 5 institutions. They've got NBA-type talent, size, quickness to guard. They're going to be tough outs for whoever plays them.
And Grand Canyon's tournament is just getting underway, and I believe McNeese State, are they in the semis or the finals of their tournament?
I think it's the finals.
By the way, a couple of winners last night, Oakland, Charleston. You got them on the 14 line. Think any of them are live plays in a week and a half?
It could be every year. There's one or two that pop up, and, you know, we really didn't know who they were going to be, and, you know, why not them?
All right. You've got Syracuse, Cincinnati, Memphis, and Oregon as still under consideration. So if either of these teams, Syracuse, Cincy, okay, Memphis, Oregon, made it to their conference final, you think then they become bubblicious, right?
I think they'll be in the discussion more than they are today.
Buckeyes, with their nice little run, they've got to win the Big Ten tournament, though, right?
Yeah, I think so. They're pretty much done beside, unless they win it.
Do you think a lot of bids are up for grabs over the next 4 or 5 days, or do you think that there's a lot of this field that's actually wet cement that's drying quickly?
I think there's probably about 10 bids up for grabs. That's what I estimate, and it may be less than that, probably not too much more, but there's a lot of teams that the committee wants to wait and see how they perform.
Shelby Mast, bracketwag.com, bracketwag.com, W-A-G, and also the bracketologist for collegeinsider.com. Follow Shelby on Twix, Twitter/X, at bracketwag, W-A-G, bracketwag. Shelby, thanks so much. All right, go back, take a nap.
I'm going to. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelby Mast. We weren't kidding. We weren't kidding. He lives in a different time zone. All right.
And he posted his last update at just before midnight Central Time.
Right. So, you know, say you take a half hour to go to sleep and what have you. And yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
For the rock and rollers, it's sleep all day, drink all night. For Shelby, it's sleep all day, watch basketball all night.
That's right. And this is money time, baby. Money time. You know what's going to be keeping them up late? Between the Mountain West and the Pac-12. Especially if you get an early upset or two in the Pac-12. If Oregon or, I'm telling you, watch USC.
They were what, preseason top 15?
They were in some polls top 15 and everybody's top 20. And they were injured from the get-go and they didn't get it together and get everybody back till 2 weeks ago. They beat Arizona by 13 the other day.
Arizona, who's likely going to be a 2 seed or 3.
Right.
Yeah, Arizona, who was on the 1 seed line before that loss.
Right.
Right. And USC, if they beat Washington in their first round game, will play Arizona in the second round. And that, I'm telling you, if there's going to be a Georgetown, a team that, you know, from 3 years ago had no chance of a bid, and they literally have to rattle off 4 wins in a row and win their conference tournament to get in. And John Fanta on our show said, watch out for Georgetown. They had Villanova in the second round, and if they beat them, I'm telling you, they're going to win 4. And they did, and they did. I'm telling you, USC is that team in the Pac-12.
And the unique thing about USC there, David, is that they actually have good – I mean, they have a good team. They've just been hurt. With that Georgetown right. team, it was like they just kind of put together a nice 2 weeks. USC could actually do damage in the tournament because Georgetown went and they got in as a 12 seed and got waxed.
And, you know, USC's got some pros. I think their starting backcourt will both play in the association. I mean, the point guard was the number one recruit in the country last year as a high schooler. And the shooting guard was all Pac-12 last year. And the only reason he isn't this year is he got hurt. So, you know, that's dangerous. That's a tough draw for Arizona. It really is. It's like, really? We got to play them?
You don't think the Buckeyes can continue this little...
They're 5-1, baby. I think they can. Listen, to me, you know, they're alive. I mean, come on, isn't the last 10 games... How many times, Mark, have we seen the committee spokesperson come out and say, well, they were 8-2 in their last 10. They were 9-1 in their last 10. I mean, if Ohio State goes on a Big Ten tournament run here, I'll tell you right now, they make the final they're in.
Well, what helps them is they are on Illinois' side of the bracket, not Purdue's. And Ohio State's beaten Purdue this season. I'm just saying, you know, if you can avoid Edie until for as long as possible, you want to. Also, the only thing that I think really hurts the Buckeyes is that if they make a run to the final game, the championship, it's on Sunday. And the bracket,
they got to win. I mean, no, they don't get in unless they win. But I'm just, he's talking about USC being a live play in the Pac-12. I'm just saying, don't rule out the Buckeyes who have 5-1 with the interim coach and see what they can do in the Big Ten tournament.
Which they start tomorrow against Iowa in the 10-7 game.
And Iowa has to win that game.
Yeah, for sure.
Iowa still has a shot if they can string along some wins. So that's just a little bracketology, selbymassbracketwag.com, as we get you ready for the tournament, Selection Sunday, a few days away.
And I'm not saying it about USC because, you know, of Andy Enfield and we're friends and all that. I'm just telling you that it's a situation where a team was injured all year. Okay, and horrible. I mean, they were in last place at the Pac-12 3 weeks ago. And now they've won 4 of 5. And the only loss was a late road loss to Washington State, who's a tournament.
Who's good.
Right. So I'm just saying, this is one of those. You know, listen, does anybody want to play Ohio State right now in the Big Ten tournament? I mean, they're 5-1 with the interim guy. It's just like, you know, well, you lost to Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament. Yeah, we caught them at the wrong time.
Yeah, I don't think the Hawkeyes are happy about having to face Ohio State in the first game when Iowa's in a must-win situation, in a must-2-win situation, maybe 3 wins if they want any shot to get into the tournament.
In Iowa, some of these players, I think they won the Big Ten tournament 2021. So some of these guys have that run in them.
Oh, no, Fran's had Big Ten tournament success. It's the NCAA tournament success that's eluded him.
Zero.
No, he's had Big Ten tournament success.
I'd have to check on this. I don't know if he's been to the Sweet 16 with Iowa. Certainly not in the last 10 years.
Michigan State loses to Minnesota. They're out, right?
That's what Shelby said.
Should be. Except I think they'd still get in the first four, but they should be out, yes.
That'd be 18-14.
Being a dumpster fire down the stretch.
With your last two losses to Indiana and Minnesota, non-tournament teams, I mean, come on. I'm sorry. That's a play-in game. And there's quite a few of those going on today and tomorrow. Miller and Moulton, along the network, thanks for listening. Diamond District Bonus Hour, the 239 is next.